This is Citizens Council Forum, America's number one public affairs program, where prominent Americans report to the nation on important issues. This week, the series of discussions is presented coast to coast by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation, with the cooperation of public-spirited broadcasters who share our belief that Americans must be informed to remain free. Now, from Washington, here is the producer of Citizens Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Citizens Council Forum. It's a real pleasure to have on today's broadcast Congressman Glenn Andrews, Republican from Alabama. Mr. Andrews was a farmer and in the outdoor advertising business before being elected to Congress. He's serving his first term and he's a member of the House Education and Labor Committee. Congressman Andrews, it's a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dick. I'm glad to be here.
Since you are a member of the Education and Labor Committee, Mr. Andrews, I'd like to discuss a subject which is receiving a great deal of attention and probably will receive more as this session of Congress goes on. This is the so-called Section 14B topic. In other words, the Taft-Hartley Act provision giving states the right to have right-to-work laws. What is your position in regards to the right-to-work issue?
I take a very strong position to keep the Taft-Hartley law exactly like it is. I think it is working beautifully, and we see no necessity of changing it at all. As a matter of fact, I have been the chief opponent of repeal in my subcommittee and in my committee in the Congress, and we worked diligently for about 3 weeks on it.
I think that to clarify this issue just a little bit, Section 14B of the Taft-Hartley Act gives states the right to decide for themselves whether or not they shall have a state right-to-work law. Your state of Alabama has such a law, does it not?
My state and 18 others have right-to-work laws under the authority given by the Taft-Hartley itself for the states to pass a law against a union shop, which would be compulsory unionism.
These right-to-work laws provide, in essence, in most of the states, it's about the same, that no person shall be forced to join a labor union for the purpose of holding a job.
That is correct. The union shop ordinarily works to the extent that 30 days after you are employed, you must automatically become a member of a union. This is not true in a right-to-work state. You have freedom then to join or not to join and to withdraw from a union.
Do you feel that responsible unionism has been damaged by these state right-to-work laws?
I do not think that any right-to-work law has damaged responsible unionism at all. What the right-to-work laws do are to protect the individual union member from an arbitrary decision of union leadership. And it serves to keep unions responsible not only in the 19 right-to-work states, but all over America.
In other words, if a union member in a right-to-work state is paying his dues, he is more apt, in your opinion, to be getting something in return for his dues. There's been one argument that's been raised against the so-called right-to-work laws, and I'd like to get your view on this. Some people say that it just doesn't seem fair that if a union is engaging in collective bargaining and secures a contract giving benefits to all employees in an industry or a plant or a store, then it wouldn't seem fair for a few employees to be able to be freeloaders, as it would be termed, and not to join the union, even though they are benefiting from the terms of this contract. What would be your comment on that?
I would comment that I have endeavored for over a period of 3 weeks to find from the Secretary of Labor and from the head of the CIO and from anybody who was able to tell me how many freeloaders there actually were. We found again and again and again that we had 100% union membership down in the right-to-work states in many, many industries until some thing like in Texas, for instance, we had a terrible wildcat strike in one industry there, and we had 100% union membership for 10 years. But after this wildcat strike, they dropped to 85% membership. Actually, full 100% participation in union membership in right-to-work states is very often achieved, and the right-to-work law doesn't seem to damage a responsible union a bit.
Actually, it provides an incentive to provide more services for its members.
Well, unionism itself has achieved a respect that it's entitled to, and it has become a saleable commodity. But the thrust of the union leadership is to make it a compulsory thing, when as a matter of fact it is saleable and can be sold and is sold in the right-to-work states more often than not, to a very high percentage. We could never find out from all the 3 weeks' testimony any firm testimony that there were a great many free riders at all. So the free rider subject is just a non-consequential subject. It just doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any sense. There are unions where, say, up to 25% of them, for some reason or another, do not join the union, but these are rather rare in the right-to-work states.
Congressman Andrews, both houses of Congress have recently passed a voting rights bill, and I know that we have our own opinions about that, and we haven't the time to go into that subject here. But at any rate, considering in this context the fact that the voting rights bill has been passed, which gives the franchise to a very large group of people in the Deep South and throughout the nation, there would seem to me at least to be some contradiction. The people who support the voting rights bill and then not wanting to let a man decide as a matter of his own personal conscience whether or not to join a union.
Dick, that's one of the most interesting aspects of this whole problem. I shall keep my eyes open very carefully, and from questioning them, it's my idea that these same people that voted in this new voting rights bill extending the franchise to universal suffrage in the 7 states are the same people that appear to want to repeal 14B and therefore take the individual's vote and let it be constricted, coerced, and intimidated, and actually the union funds dues used for political purposes. In other words, they would give him the franchise on one hand and then take it away from him largely by union activities on the other. The inconsistency of this position, I think, will show up whenever this bill is brought to the floor, and those people that have favored one measure and are going to try to favor the other are confronted with an inconsistency that's going to be awfully hard to handle.
Do you believe that there is a serious threat to the form of government that we have traditionally enjoyed by a compulsory unionism or compulsory membership in anything that is going to take members' funds and use them for political purposes?
Well, actually, Dick, there's a law preventing the union funds from being used to support a federal political candidate. However, at the present time, this does not apply to state candidates. But it's the overall entry of the unions into politics itself that I think constitutes a very dangerous threat in America. They have long ago given up the idea that wages and hours and fringe benefits and all the things that trade unions were born to do to begin with has been abandoned in the interest of taking an active part in most every sort of politics. That is why that I favor the right to work laws so much, is because of the use of union funds for political purposes and unions as organizations for the effective political organization. Actually, the unions have claimed to have elected this time over 135 congressmen. Well, that's quite a job, it seems to me, for 17 million out of our 70 million workers in America, for 17 million to exercise that much political power seems to me a little out of balance. And actually, this right-to-work law, if it is suspended in the 19 different states, would give them that much additional control over the political expression of those people who were forced to join the union in compulsory unionism. And that's one reason I think that the right-to-work laws are so well-drawn and are such a stabilizing force on national unionism.
Congressman Andrews, I'd like to ask you about another topic in the few minutes that we have remaining. I know of your deep interest in constitutional government, and I'd like to get your frank appraisal of where we seem to be heading and what reaction you're getting from the people of your district and throughout the nation.
Well, Dick, I am devoted to the basic law. I always have been. I studied under some of the masters. I studied under the same professors that brought Katzenbach up. We seem to have developed a divergence of ideas after we left these professors at my university. Actually, I deplore the disposition to form your laws all on a basis of public opinion, particular public opinion that is generated in political theater like we had in Selma, producing nothing but emotions in the country, and that seems to be our only mooring. We passed a voting rights bill only recently that, in my opinion, violated the basic law so fundamentally and in many, many places that it was distressing. And to all of us who have been devoted to the basic law, which is the Constitution of the United States, this trend to lose your mooring from that basic law and to follow public opinion very closely that's generated by political theater and demonstrations and all that, that sort of thing is rather distressing to me, but it's a new factor in American political life and must be dealt with as a realist. That is happening. What people think is finally being translated to law, even if it is emotionally conceived. And this, I think, is an unfortunate thing and must be combated, however, and dealt with as a reality. It is here, and we must all learn to understand it and deal with it properly.
How can it be dealt with, Congressman?
Well, that is by analyzing the demonstrations and realizing that there are limitations to the demonstration idea. The demonstration idea has been effective, but when it gets to the point of we shall violate all laws that we think are unjust, and we will violate all laws that we have not taken a part in, and one of the leadership the other day has finally put it, we shall violate all laws that we don't think God had anything to do with, then you get into an area in demonstrations that's irresponsible, and they must be some kind of curbs put on them.
Congressman Andrews, our time has gone by very quickly. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Dick, it's been a pleasure to be here. Many right. Thanks to you.
Right. Our guest on today's edition of Citizens Council Forum has been Representative Glenn Andrews, Republican from Alabama. Join us again next week at the same time when we'll be back with another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Till then, Dick Morphew speaking coast to coast, saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
Citizens Council Forum is dedicated to the preservation of our American tradition of freedom. If you agree that individual liberty and constitutional government must be preserved, if you want to do something positive and worthwhile to help protect our freedom, then we want to hear from you. Just write to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We'll be happy to send you, without obligation, literature showing how you can help. Address your card or letter to Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. America's number one public affairs series is presented coast to coast each week by Citizens Council Forum, a nonprofit educational corporation. Join us next week for another informative discussion and remind your friends to tune in. It's time to take a stand. By working together, we can and will safeguard our freedom.